Welcome to the Property Mom Podcast. I'm Dalapo and I'm on a mission to empower the next generation of property investors. So I'm a wife, a mother of two wonderful kids who are 5 and 3, and I'm what you'd call a property entrepreneur. And if you're just joining for the first time, thanks so much for listening to this. And my hope is that you listen and you learn something new every time. Because I've juggled the past few years between raising a family, property investing, developments, refurbs, rent-to-rent, and educating. So my love for property runs really deep. This podcast is for anyone looking to get into property, build a portfolio of owned or managed properties, and build long-term wealth, whether as a side business or if you eventually want to quit your job and run your own business full-time. You're definitely in the right place. Here you'll find discussions, ideas, strategies for UK property investing. I'll also be inviting guests as well to share their own experiences to inspire and educate us. So my guest today is Corinne Aboue, who is a multidisciplinary designer who has worked within the architecture and interior design industry for the past 6 years. She's been in hospitality and the high-end residential sector. She has worked on hotels such as Westin, Marriott, Corinthia, and Nobu. She's also worked in the retail design sector on projects for H&M, Mulberry, and Nike. So she has really good experience. And with all of that, she's recently started her own practice called Coca's Design. And her aim is to champion collaborative, inclusive, and people-centered work, not just in the UK, but internationally, starting with her home back in Sierra Leone. Corinne is young, fierce, insightful, and really tells the story of how she got her inspiration from a difficult experience when she was growing up. She talks about how she got into this industry and how much she loves it. So do listen in and enjoy. I'm really excited today to be talking with Corinne, and she really focuses on high-end real estate. So she does a lot of high-end residential refurbs and interior designs. One of the reasons why I wanted her to come on is because for such a young age, she's done some really interesting work, but she's worked with such hotels as Westin, the Marriott, Corinthia, Nobu. These are really high-end establishments. And now she's gone on to set up. If you could tell us a bit more about what you do now.
Right now, I am an architectural and interior designer. I am currently doing high-end resi in Freetown, Sierra Leone, where I'm from. I'm currently working also with LC Owusu Architects. That's what I've been doing throughout lockdown when I started my practice.
Oh, great. So this is a recent thing that you've just launched out, set up your practice. Well done. Well done.
Thank you.
It's funny because the first time your name was mentioned was when I had put on this post on Instagram, and I said, where are all the Black women in property? Like, let's showcase them. Let's highlight them. And I didn't even think about it that Black History Month was coming. That would be a great time to really showcase some of the things that people are doing. And I love the fact that, you know, you started young, you've done some of these really interesting projects, and that you're now moving into your own practice. Yeah. So how have you found sort of starting out? Because you're starting out in one of the most difficult times I can imagine during the lockdown.
I feel like I've sort of been forced into it to some extent. So I have been on this architecture journey trying to qualify, and mainly working in interior architecture and design. And I was supposed to start a new
her own practice
contract. I've always been working freelance anyway. Yeah. So I was meant to start a new contract during the week that lockdown was actually announced, unfortunately. So in the weeks following, I just sat down and thought, you know, what do I do next? Things are going to be hard. Jobs are hard to come by. And I'd already started a project back home in Freetown. So the best thing that I could think about at the time was just starting my own practice formally, and then putting myself out there to get more work. Yeah.
So did you get training to become an interior designer or an architect?
I will be starting my qualifications in January. Sure. which pushed me to do that because I've started my own practice and I actually just want to qualify and be able to have all the qualifications needed to, yeah. Before getting to your part three, you do part one and part two, which is undergrad, 3 years, time in industry, mm-hmm. And then you can go back and do your part two, which is 2 years of master's. So as I've had my architectural training, mm-hmm. You kind of have the all-encompassing practice. Okay.
You can do both interior and
yes. architecture. So it's really a multidisciplinary mm-hmm. study, I suppose. So if you do architecture, you can go into interiors. So I didn't need to get another qualification to get into that because it's all the same base of knowledge. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And so it just gives you a bit of a foundation. I come from a finance background and they always say accountancy is the bedrock of finance. So
yeah.
I guess architecture in a sense would be the bedrock of interior design. But it's interesting that you had gotten quite a lot of this experience with some of this high-end hospitality and hotels prior to even getting all your qualifications. So I'm interested to know your journey. How did you find yourself doing all of this work?
Okay, so I decided to be an architect quite young, that I wanted to be an architect quite young. I was born and grew up for my younger years in Freetown, Sierra Leone. And I'm not sure how much many people know about, you know, the turmoil that happened there in mid 90s, and I was there. So I just remember one of my most vivid thoughts were seeing, you know, buildings being burnt down.
Wow.
That if I was ever come back, I would like to be able to have an impact, and the structures were the things that, you know, stood out to me. When I moved to the UK, I realized I was actually creative, and the way that I could envision having an impact and helping out back home when I got older was to become an architect. So I think I knew quite early on that's what I wanted to do. And then during my part one, when I qualified, I tried to get a job in architecture and somehow got a job in retail design. Mm. And I wasn't opposed to it because I just thought, you know, you can try different things. Yeah. And within the retail design I practice, they do really big windows and interiors. So all the Christmas windows that you see on Oxford Street or on the High Street, they did most of them. So I did windows for H&M and Nike and Mulberry. And remember thinking when, because we left, we were able to escape. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, and because of that, I gained, you know, some really a good portfolio working for this practice. And then I really enjoyed it because it was so fast paced. And then I went into an architecture practice doing, you know, following the traditional route. Mm-hmm. As much as I loved it, it was a little bit slower paced than the first job.
I can imagine.
Because really slow paced, yeah.
Because I'm very fascinated, you know, we walk down the high street and a lot of times I look at some of these very creative designs on the windows and I'm like, who is behind this? And so it's interesting that, you know, you've worked in that capacity. They're very, very interesting.
I mean, before I even started the job, I didn't even know that this was a whole industry, you know. I did my part one experience, and that was amazing. It was a regeneration project in Notting Hill. But then I got another opportunity to work in interior interior architecture and design for another big practice. And I just loved it. So that's why I've got so much experience in interior design and interior architecture. Mm-hmm. Because one, it's faster paced. I get to be way more creative than I was able to be in architecture, in the capacity or in the place that I was working in anyway. Mm-hmm. So I guess now I'm just trying to find a way to merge both my passions.
That is nice that you found your way through the experiences, in a sense, because you were just open to a new experience, and that opened amazing doors for you to be able to work with some of these higher end retailers, mm-hmm. and to be able to gather this type of experience. And so you went effectively from sort of doing all the storefronts, going back into architecture, then evolving again into some higher end interior design. How did you then think to build on that experience?
In the back of my mind, I still needed to or wanted to go back, because that was still in my part one phase of architecture. My end goal has always been, or was always, you know, go back to Freetown and make an impact there. I think working in interior architecture and being open, I guess it just put a seed in my mind, and not just interior design. It could be furniture design. I think a lot of people confuse interior design with just cushions and, fixings and furnishings. And, but it's also...
Okay, so you're not only talking about just the fixtures, the furnishing and the way it looks. You're also talking about the physical structure. So the way you see navigating within the internal structure of the building as well.
So
which is very interesting, because when I'm looking at a property, I'm constantly doing that, right? Because we're looking at how to maximize the interior and to best showcase it, especially in my case. And one of the reasons why I resonate with what you're saying is because we're doing a lot of service accommodation, which is similar to hotels, in that we're trying to create that boutique, you know, creative look, right? So that guests are enjoying their stay. So if you're designing for a hotel, I imagine you're not just looking at, say, the aesthetics, but you're also looking at the journey, the customer experience as they go through the property.
What makes that hotel unique? Why should someone come and stay in that space, you know? And that's why I fell in love with interior architecture, because it's not just one thing. You're always constantly thinking about people and how people use space, and that's a very important thing for me in my design thinking.
Well done. So as far as you, and we're going to come back to you as a person, you know, I'd like to deep dive a bit into some of the motivations and how, you know, you've talked a bit about your upbringing and how you saw things happen. We'll come back to that. But what I also was interested to know is, you decided to set up your company in this space, and what kind of goals do you have for yourself? You know, like, I imagine that when you started out, you thought, okay, well, this has happened, I'm going to create a company where I will then start commissioning myself out for freelance work, in a sense.
Yeah.
And how have you found that experience since? And what are your hopes for the future?
It's been a little bit difficult, you know, breaking a wall down or redesigning a space. So I was mainly doing that kind of stuff, the architectural side of interior architecture. Mm-hmm. But I think one thing that has really helped is having a community and being able to collaborate with people.
Yeah.
And so through that, I've been able to get some work. And what I want for the future is to, I guess, grow. Yeah, have an impact, like, with the designs I have, both in the UK and, you know, internationally. And not just, again, limiting myself to just one form of practice, but also being open to different ways of creating. And that's what I for now, that's my main
that's your main goal
yeah.
In addition to finishing your qualification.
In addition to finishing my qualification, hopefully next year.
Yeah, fantastic. I'm so impressed by the fact that you already have so much experience as you go through all of that, right? So, you know, because normally we always look at it the other way. Oh, I have to finish the work. And, you know, it's almost like you want to start and then get perfect as you get.
Yeah.
Right. So it's good that not only have you had some experience, but you've also decided, you know, I'm going to go on my own. And as I'm doing that, I'm going to be learning and building, learning and working. You know, it's almost like it's going hand in hand. And I guess because you're a creative, right? So.
Yeah. I mean, I think I always thought I was going to go the traditional route. I think sometimes life just forces.
Yeah, it does.
There's no time to wait or waste. Like if these are the things that you need or want or have a passion for, and one path isn't necessarily like working, you need to be able to adjust.
Yeah.
As much as I get very anxious about it.
You have to make it happen. Yeah. You don't just sit at home and wait.
Choice.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you just need to put yourself out there. If you, no risk, no reward, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And I always say it that I'd love to know what the stats are for business failures and things like that. Because previously, before you could set up a company, you had to first have put out God knows how many thousands to get an established location. You had to put so much on branding, marketing. You know, you're starting off, you haven't even gotten one paying customer. You've already spent £10,000 at least.
Yeah, yeah.
But now, you know, you just have a good idea, creativity in the way you present that idea, and you can set up your business, right? And you know, that's amazing that you already have some experience, and so you're able to leverage on that experience and say, look, rather than wait around and wait for this whole season to pass,
to start. Yeah, one thing I'd like to add to that though is having a good network of people, mm-hmm. And speaking to that network of people, yes. To help you realize that, you know, things can be done, because often I didn't find the accessibility into architectural design or into the architectural field of working in practice very easy. I think having a network that can give you information, educate you, and spur you on is incredibly important. And that's been a big help in me doing all of this as well. So I won't say I've done this on my own. I'm really happy. Yeah. People to speak to and people to like encourage me,
yes.
To do all of this. And just to plug this, BFA, Black Females in Architecture, mm-hmm. have been one of the big networks that I'm in, that I follow. And Paradigm.
Oh, I've heard of Paradigm before.
Yeah. So having that network and seeing what people are doing and mm-hmm. being educated, you know, makes you you're like,
is doing this, there's nothing stopping me. Because it's interesting that you mentioned that, because I was going to ask, because I've had somebody else who's an architect on this podcast, and her point she raised about Black females in architecture, how have you found that experience, like you know, trying to get into that field? And
because I just, you know, start from uni, you always feel like you're the outsider. It's been a challenge. I think I was one of three Black girls on course. Wow. And every year it was about the same. A lot of the people on the course probably like knew people, you know, their parents, you know, might know someone, or I guess they have a bit more of a rapport with the tutors because they have more things in common. So things like that, I think, didn't help with the you know, anxiety or feeling like belong in that. And then going into practice as well, and you literally being, I think in most of my practices, I've literally been the only Black person, and not just a Black woman. Sometimes, you know, there's another Black woman or man, but it's not common.
Yes. So do you have any ideas? And I don't know if you guys discuss it, you know, within some of your forums as to why that is, because I grew up in Nigeria, right? And I know the numbers are not necessarily reflective, but there's so many architects.
Yeah.
my brother is tech, that, you know,
mother's
an architect. Like there's so many architects, right? So there's not a want to find them within the society. So it's quite interesting when we come here and, you know, it's like it was that everywhere she was, she really stood out. She didn't necessarily have that same access, in a sense, where, you know, like you said, the rich uncle who she can just kind of tap into for a project, or who knows somebody who works with a large firm that she can get business from. You know, it's not that straightforward. So, you know,
I have noticed is that a lot of Black people, friends anyway, that I studied with, don't tend to so many barriers, and it gets to the point where you're just like, is it actually worth it, you know? It's not good for, you know, someone's confidence or like self-worth, and when you go through all these battles, sometimes it's just you know, maybe I can just do something else.
Yeah.
So that is one thing that I can say. They will still, a lot of them are still within the creative industry and environment, but a lot of them have just been like, nah, I'm good, I'm fine here, I'm making good money here, I don't need to qualify as an architect, I'm still doing, to some extent, you know, what I love. So I guess because of that, maybe that might be one of the reasons. I mean, I can't really speak for...
Of course, and you can only speak from your own personal...
Yeah, from what I see, what I think. And that's why these groups are incredibly useful and incredibly important to have for...
Say this, that's one of the reasons, that's one of the things that really inspired me to start this podcast, about sort of sharing things that, you know, Black women are doing. You know, I talk to everyone, but it's important that, you know, we're also showcasing some of these talent, you know, and stars like yourself, that, you know, as you're coming up, that we're showcasing so that other people who are younger are looking up and saying, oh, well, if she can navigate it and still create something out of it, then I definitely can. Yes. Right, it's so important.
Exactly. And going back is one of the things I wish in my part one, I didn't know any architects. Yeah. I didn't have access to any architects. So I didn't have, if I had all these questions, who do I go to?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's good to, and it's only, I think, at the end of part two that I BFA, like two or three years ago, that I came across BFA and Paradigm, and then there's like all these new part twos, part ones in the group, and then, you know, and I just think, oh, you're so lucky to have this platform ask all the questions, you know, to get information.
Seeing that comment, it's almost like people are coming through, right, and you're all having your individual experiences and, you know, navigating them and getting through them somehow. But then the minute you come together, you can then create a platform, and it's almost like then that platform starts to fuel itself and can then help other people easily navigate the same journey, because in a sense, they don't have to repeat all the mistakes. You can, you know, show them the way and say, look, this is a better way of doing it, or at least have the dialogue, right?
Yeah, so exactly.
You know, I'm really happy that you are at least able to find, and I like the fact that you said, you know, I didn't do this on my own, the decision to kind of launch out, you know, and it was all because of this, you know, I'm in a network, I have accessibility to other people, and we're rubbing minds, and it's given me this sort of
exactly.
Able to go out and launch out. Mm-hmm. So really well done.
Thank you.
So let's go back to you. So you, Corinne. So I guess you are, where are you from originally, and how did you sort of end up here in UK? Because you talked about being...
I'm from Freetown, Sierra Leone, and during the war, to, you know, escape and move to...
Okay.
And then I lived there for a while, but my dad's British, so always whether we... you know, want to stay in the Gambia or whether we wanted to move to the UK where he has family. So we decided to move here, and that's how I have ended up here and now have my dual nationality.
How old were you when you moved here?
10.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
10 or 6.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah. So you pretty much navigated the UK and then acclimatized, went to school, uni. Mm-hmm. And
yeah.
How come you're here now?
Exactly.
Really,
yeah.
Fantastic. And in terms of obstacles, like you've mentioned a few, like, you know, being sort of the single Black woman and all of that, what main obstacles would you say could have impeded you from moving forward? Like, now you've come out on this side, you've set up your own practice. What do you look back on and you think, you know what, if I hadn't overcome this, I wouldn't be here now?
If I've overcome it. If I've overcome it. But I think that I'm still it's progress. That's how I view life. So I think that I am very anxious and I have this massive imposter syndrome. So that has stopped me from doing things earlier, like trying to qualify. So I could have started my part three last year.
I have this imposter syndrome because I hear it and I feel like different people have different interpretations in the sense of how it impacts them. So how does
imposter? Had it before until really uni. I think uni is when it started. So not feeling like I belong, but then qualifying, like, you know, finishing, and then again being within the practices and always being, you know, the one Black person or the third or second Black person. And again, never feeling like I belong. So then that leads into, oh, am I good enough? Oh, do I?
Yes.
Can I do this? Oh God, you know, maybe I shouldn't be here. Why am I the only one, you know? So, and then it starts to, what's the word? It starts to
it sort of cascades and
So, I guess, yeah, I'm just, that's how I've, you know, felt like sometimes am I good enough or, you know, do I belong here, you know? But I think I don't, sometimes it stops me from doing a lot, yes.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I like to, you know, listen to podcasts, educate myself, and I've listened to a lot of really interesting people talking about how they have the same thing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, yeah, like- okay. So then because of hearing of other people's experiences with I guess anxiety and that and this imposter syndrome, like I think, well, if they've been able to do it, why is that stopping me from doing anything?
When it's scared, exactly. So even though you don't feel adequate, you don't feel comfortable, you still go ahead and do it. And
exactly.
I saw a saying recently that was very amusing. It says, if you're comfortable doing it, you started too late.
Yes, exactly.
It's too late. You should have started when you were uncomfortable and then you grow into it and then you start, you know. So at this point, you're now so comfortable in it. You're now starting out. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so you get a bit complacent and you don't learn. So, so yeah, your original question, I am still, you know, battling through that. But as long as it's not stopping me from achieving, you know, what I aim to achieve, then, yeah.
Who's interested, maybe listening to this and saying, you know what, I would love to be in this field. I'd love to either be in high end, because one of the key things, one thing to even become an architect or get into interior design, but then to be able to actually now go into the kind of the high end sector, it's like, what would you say is a good, to at least give them that, that higher chance
network.
Of
network.
Networking. It's true.
I paths are different, you know, it's different, sorry. And lucky in terms of how I got into the high-end, you know, hospitality sector. A practice that you want to work for, keep keep trying. send message, email people, you know. I know that's like that's a bit like, oh god, you know, but
yeah.
Try and create a network. It's some, as much as it pains me to say this, it is really about who you know.
It is.
And do your research, to build a portfolio, even if it's just taking, you know, go on Pinterest and type in high-end resi or high-end something, and you're the existing space that you're in, and then start designing.
Yeah.
And, you know, change that up, you know, learn the programs that you need to create those visuals and build your portfolio, and then start sending them out, as well as trying to, you know, network and meet people within that realm.
Within that space. And when we talk about networking, because there's different types of networking, there's the networking where you're networking with other interior designers and architects, or you are networking outside of that space, letting people know that this is what you do. So do you do both, or where have you found?
I think all throughout my life in the UK, most of my friends have known that I want to do architecture, so I often talk to them about it, and if they know someone that might need, you know, the house that I'm designing, or that I designed that's being built right now in Freetown, it was through a friend. And also, again, professionally, go to webinars, because that's what we've been doing recently. Go to seminars, go to lectures, go to events, you know, that kind. So that's sort of stuff that I did prior to
That is a good point. So the training, the webinars, well, the seminars, and all those sorts of things where
you
can actually physically interact with people, at least when we're able to, with people like-minded, in a sense. You build up contacts from there, especially complementary contacts. So those ones, like if you have friends that are structural engineers, for instance, or you have friends that are in trade, you know, because they will always be coming across people who could potentially be your clients.
Yeah.
So you want to be networking with people like that. I know somebody who's got so well done, really good, and really interesting to hear about your journey. And so, and I guess the last question I'm going to ask is really around dreams for the future. I know we've talked about you, because you've talked about going back home, making an impact. What have you seen for yourself, kind of in like the?
That's a good question. I think I've always thought, you know, from a young age, I want to be an architect.
Yeah.
And I'm almost also just allowing for things to happen, as well as working for them. Because I think sometimes this year especially has taught me that you can make all these plans and they won't necessarily go
according to your plan.
So, I mean, I would like for my company to grow. Absolutely. That's a big dream. I would like to have a company in Freetown and in the UK. I would like to, I don't know, again, merge my interior and architectural practices, and maybe some other, you know, furnishing dreams in there.
But you could almost have your own bespoke range.
Exactly. Yes. So that's hopefully a you know, near a dream that might be happening soon.
Nice.
I think I just have the thoughts of what could be, but I'm just, you know, letting God.
I know. God has for you.
That's
so important, isn't it? So in a way, and you know, it's constant, there's battle constantly going on, right? Of you creating all these dreams and having them visualized, and you know how it is, where you see it, you'll be it. But at the same time, let life also take you on the journey.
Exactly.
Life is even more creative in what it brings to you. Like, for instance, there's no way to have plots this crazy COVID times, right? So if you had a very fixed idea as to what 2020 was going to be like, then you'd be very disappointed.
Well, I actually did, and I think that's why I'm like, no, I'm just gonna let whatever
people have learned.
Yeah.
But so I set really very strong goals for in the year, you know, at the beginning. I started doing that from last year, I think it was. But it's funny because you can still be successful in those goals,
yeah,
regardless of what happens. But those goals have to be big enough but flexible. Like, do you understand? They can't be, they can't be too specific sometimes. Yeah. They need to have like an overarching kind of theme. So you almost have the big dreams and then you then work backwards from there. So like 1 year happens not to go in a certain way, it's not the end of the world, because you can make up for it in the next year. But in that year now, we've had other opportunities, right? This year has opened up so many other opportunities that you wouldn't have thought to plot for in your big goals, right?
Mm.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Daily walks in the park down the road. And I always have an end point that I end up in by the river. It's beautiful. And I just sit there. Sometimes I listen to music and then just, you know, away from all social media and all that. Or I just, you know, sit there in silence and think. And I'll try and make it short, but I always take this one path to get to that end, to that end river point.
Yeah.
And for some reason, I decided that let me try something different. You know, why am I going through here? I always go through here. Yeah. And there's like different way. There's different ways of getting, I guess. I mean, I've never used them. I always use the one, but I know that there are different ways. So I just thought, oh, let me try something different. Right. And I walked it, and it was honestly such a beautiful scene. I'd noticed stuff I'd never noticed in the park before. So in terms of relating to this, like learning things you didn't learn because you're trying something different, you're open to something different.
Yeah.
And then I got to the end, you know, to the end, to the river quicker than I would have if I used the other path.
Wow.
And then I sat down and I turned, because the path I take is usually to the left of me, and the whole path was flooded. So the whole time I'd been like, I'm gonna go this way, you know, and this nagging thing was like, just try something different. And either way, if I'd gone that way, I wouldn't have been able to get to my destination. And in that moment, I was like, whoa, what's going, you know, like sometimes you just get this.
That epiphany.
You know, I was like, yeah. And I was like, oh, so, and it feels like that's what my life is doing right now in terms of my career. So yeah, I just wanted to
I think a lot of people in 2020 can resonate with this.
Yeah, exactly. Like sometimes you have to try something different, no matter how scary it is, or if you don't think it will work, like try it. You don't know what you're gonna gain.
So
that was
and to be honest, you know, I think assessing, if you're going to make a change, something drastic, I think really the only thing to do is to look at the worst case scenario.
Yeah.
Like, you know what? What happens if I take this other route? Okay, fine. It takes me 2 hours longer to get to my end point. Okay, I can live with that, right? Mm-hmm. So I think sometimes if you just assess and think about what is the worst case scenario here, you'll do a lot more things because you can actually live with it, you know? Yeah. And if you've made that allowance in your mind, then at least you can explore. And it's definitely a lovely way to sort of wrap things up in terms of just leaving that, because I was going to ask you, oh, what are your parts in words, and you kind of just rolled into your that was a beautiful way to kind of just sum it all up, like you know, your journey, you can take different paths to your end point, and you can find that you might be exposed to more riches and more you know, a richer experience.
Yes.
And just doing it the same way you've always done.
Yeah.
So that was so beautiful. Thank you, Corinne.
Thank you so much.
All the best as you continue to expand on your dreams and build on your practice as well.
Thank you so much.
I love the way Corinne wrapped it up with that positive message at the end, especially because of this crazy year we're having, which has definitely not been business as usual, but which I can say has thankfully opened us to different experiences that we wouldn't normally have had. So I must say I'm personally grateful for this year. But I'm also more impressed with how Corinne decided to launch out on her own even before finishing her qualifications. And despite the circumstances that this year threw that could have been a curveball, but which did not deter her determination to start something new. The point she made about the community that gave her that impetus, that gave her that inspiration to be able to launch out, and the impact it made on her, that is a point that I really took to heart, because to me, community is everything. And a lot of times we need that community to be able to really give us that boost. And for me, I found community to be super helpful. And that's why I'm really proud to be in the process of launching the Property Kept Simple community. And so watch this space. You know, it's a space where, you know, on my podcast, you will hear blogs. You definitely get a lot of information for free. But within the community, the idea is for those that want to take things to the next level and really start building assets and really start working on their journey. So watch this space and I'll be giving a bit more information about that. And until the next episode, do stay safe, build assets, and let's make an impact.